Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Find what lights you up. Find an activity or something that just makes you, gives you that little spark of like, oh, I remember when I was a kid, I really loved doing that. And it doesn't have to be something like artistically creative, like visual artistically creative. It could be anything. Like I said in the beginning, like our friend who really loves doing spreadsheets. Great.
Yeah.
Follow that. Do that. Do more of those things that, I mean, it sounds so cliche. You hear it all the time. Like, do more of what, you know, lights you up and what gives you joy, like what makes you happy. But that's genuinely what it is. You just have to allow yourself, give yourself the permission to play. Give yourself the permission to figure out what that means. Because it's not going to look like everybody else's. You know, I don't know. I think everybody is creative, and it's not, we just get stuck on creative being art.
Yeah, so true.
It just isn't.
Hi, friends. I'm Benjamin J. Thomas. Today, we continue our Here to Create conversation series with friends of ours who are showing up in the world with their full selves and living creative lives in a variety of different fields and arenas. Today's guest is a close friend of ours. Her name is Sarah Mock. Sarah is a lifelong creative who has learned how to follow her curiosity into art mediums as diverse as pencil drawing and doll creation, pattern design, even coin making. Sarah has this wonderful, unique, playful style that just seems to permeate all of the things that she creates and her whole life, regardless of whatever form she happens to be drawn to at that particular moment. In addition to Sarah, today I am joined by my wife, Joy Thomas, for a conversation about following your curiosity wherever it leads. Please welcome our friend, Sarah Mock.
Hello, friends. I am so delighted today to be here with, well, Joy Thomas again, my wife.
Hi.
My wife. Is my wife. I don't know why I have to say it like that. And our dear friend, Sarah Mock. Sarah.
Hey.
Hi.
Waving. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
So good. So good.
Okay.
So good.
Good
to be here. We love your setup there is just so great. And you're in this same room that Adam was in. For those of you who don't know, Sarah happens to be married to Adam Mock, who was on another conversation not super long ago. And I think you're in the same space, but there's just so much life and fun stuff. This is like your side of the room, like Adam's side of the room, like is super Adam looking, and then your side is you, and it's really a delight.
It's much messier, yeah.
It's messier.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there. It's fun. But I'll kind of start it off by noting, actually just pointing some of that stuff out. I think one of the things that I love about your artwork, Sarah, and it's your personality that comes through it. It is so evident. If anyone has any question about this, just go scroll through Sarah Mock's Instagram feed, and you can just look through all these different cycles of like life coming out through Sarah. But there's this thread underneath the whole thing that's like, it's still Sarah. And you're a visual artist. You've explored many mediums over the years.
Yes.
And I would love for you just to tell us a little bit. One of the places that I think is a wonderful place for us to start has to do with our early days of creating. I think at some point, especially when we're young, we start to learn how to kind of tune into that creative voice, that spirit that kind of leads you. You're somebody who I respect a great deal as an artist who follows your curiosity. Where did you start doing that? Like, at what point did you kind of start tuning into the curiosity factor?
I don't remember a time that I wasn't creating, honestly. When I was a kid, I started with drawing. I would just draw all the time, all the time. Like we would go to relatives for, you know, in Indianapolis for like Thanksgiving and Easter and stuff. And as soon as I would get there, I'd ask my grandma where her paper and pencils were. Mm. And I would just sit and draw. And there was actually a time where one of my best friends came over and asked me to come out and play. And I was like, I can't, I'm working on side profiles right now. So I don't have time to play.
I don't have time to play.
I love that. How old were you? When that
at that point, I think I was like, I want to say like 7 or 8.
So cute.
Yeah. So I've, I'll try not to get like too dark, but like it was an escape for me. It was like the one source in my life where I felt safe and kind of could control the parameters of things. So I would just create. I just had to be creating all the time.
Mm. I love that you found that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really don't remember a time where I just wasn't trying something creative.
Do you remember having any like opinions or thoughts when you were young about what you were creating, like whether like judging it, whether it's good or bad, or was it just like for the delight at that point?
That's a really interesting question. I remember never being happy with what I created. Mm. Never. There was one time that I was really, really thrilled with what I did, which was do you guys remember? I don't know. I know you're younger than me, but do you remember Madonna's True Blue album?
Yes, I was in first grade.
And it's just like her side, like she just has her head back and it's her side profile. And my sister had the album. She was a huge Madonna fan and still is, I think. But I drew that for her because I was so fat. I loved Madonna's face. She has a really drawable face. And so I drew the album cover for her as a gift once. Aww. As a little surprise. And that was like the first time I was like, oh, I think I actually know how to do this. Like this is, you know, I'm really proud of that one. But no, usually I'm pretty hard on myself. I judge a lot of what I do is not good enough. Mm. Unfortunately. It's getting better as I get older.
Yeah, for sure. Is it something that you remember? Because I'm just like, how do we learn that? I guess I'm just like fascinated with that. Like, how do we learn that even as children? Like, do we first just delight in it, or we see something we like and we want it, have it? Like, how would you know as a 7-year-old whether something's, I guess, what you want to do or not?
Yeah. I don't know. That's a really good, I know. I would love to figure that out. Have you ever heard Ira Glass talk about the gap that artists go through where if you start an endeavor or whenever, it's this gap because you have good taste, but you don't have the skill set yet. So you know what you want. You know what's good, in terms of, we'll say like design, but you're in this gap where you have to like build the skill set to be able to actually produce the good design that you know you can do.
It starts with good taste. And that makes sense then, because you would have that as a little kid even. Oh, I like this painting or drawing in a book or anything. And then knowing I want to do that. Yeah. Okay.
Which feels in some way, it's like that's creative instinct and intuition. That feels to me like that's the impulse to create. That's why you are choosing to sit down and create instead of going to play or whatever. Like that was just, it was in you to that degree. So, but like, and then at one point, some of us like tune out of that voice because we start to judge. Mm-hmm. We go like, it's good or bad without even realizing. I think the gap thing is helpful because we're like, there's always this gap between, I think that this is a creator too. I'm like, I can kind of envision or feel into what I want something to be or sound like. And all I'm doing is just like trying to like, get it out of me. I always think of it like the birthing process a little bit.
Yeah.
So it kind of, I don't know, feels like that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even though you're a man and you don't know what that means.
Okay. I know. I lost my train of thought.
Because I said birthing process. You're welcome. I love
you know,
comparing creativity.
An activation point for Sarah and I. So way to go.
you're welcome. Well, on that point, sorry for asking that. I'm curious, like, so over those years, as it's kind of evolved, I think we're like learning to tune into that. And then something kills it, like something kills our creativity. And every artist has something that's like their kryptonite of creativity that stops you from evolving, from saying yes, taking the next step, whatever. What has that looked like for you? And how have you kind of learned to navigate with that over the years?
Yeah, so I think it's always been that self-sabotage, that setting up my own, not allowing myself to just make mistakes, you know? I guess it's like that weird concept that you have to be good immediately. But I mean, going back to the gap. So what would stop me, what would kill it for me is just that constant beratement inside myself saying, that's not good. You're not good. You're always going to be mediocre. You're never going to get to the point where, you know, people want what you have to offer, where it's considered good design or good art or of value, I guess. And it's just that thought process it becomes so unconscious and subconscious. I don't even know that that program is running in my background, mm-hmm. in my head. So when I'm creating, it's still like just that feeling of like, yeah, well, whatever. It's mediocre. So we're going to just stop, just knock it off. You're not doing anything of value, you know?
Yeah.
Because there was a long time where I didn't create. And I think a lot of it has to do with when you become a parent, you know, newborn children take a lot of effort and energy. And so there really is not a lot of time to pour into yourself.
Yeah.
So there was a huge gap where I stopped creating. And if I did create, it was so heavily laced with self-criticism that I genuinely couldn't find enjoyment from it, which is really sad because I was, you know, but there's, I guess it speaks to a little bit of a resilience because I refuse to stop creating. I can't not create because I've noticed that when I have those time periods where I don't create, I get really depressed and I get really sad and I just feel like a part of me is dying inside.
Yeah. So how
go ahead, Dad.
I was going to say, how have you transitioned back when you're in those spaces? Is it just like one day you're just like, okay, I'm doing this? Or how is there like a process?
Yeah.
How is that?
I wish I could say there's a process for me. A lot of times it's just waiting, waiting for it to kind of ease out. And, you know, I will do things like just try to go for a walk or try to just get into a different environment to, you know, jumpstart my brain and allowing myself to just rest and say, okay, you know, maybe right now I'm just going to stop whatever I'm working on because clearly this is just, it's become a bit unhealthy just how much like negative thoughts I'm putting into it. So I will a lot of times just kind of step away. And sometimes it's only like 10 minutes and then I'll walk back and go, oh, it's actually not that bad. Now I can see it with totally different eyes and continue to move through. But a lot of times I cry, crying helps me. Yeah. And then I wait because eventually it's an ebb and flow. It'll come back. The inspiration always comes back it's the inspiration.
Yeah.
I love that. Inspiration always comes back.
You've kind of worked out this sort of framework and been living out of this idea of play, create, and heal. And I love those three words. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh yeah, that's Sarah Mach all the way. I would love to hear you just chat a little bit about what each of those words means to you and how those have been embodied and also helped you as a human being navigate life and being alive on this planet.
Yeah. So this is actually kind of a newer thing for me. So I'm still formulating everything, but play has always been a huge part of my life, even though I just told the story about how I didn't play with my friend because I was drawing. But just that it's an essence for me. Like, I just feel like even when I wasn't, you know, creating literally, there was always just a playfulness. And I don't know if it's because I'm the youngest in my family or whatever, but I just have this, I refuse to grow up. I refuse to not have that youthful spirit in any situation. I wouldn't say in any situation, but it's hard for me to turn it off. And I think, you know, it reminds me of my grandma. My grandma lived to be 101. And she, when I think of her, all I think about is her laughing. Mm. She had like this big cackle of a laugh. And she just, and she lived through, you know, she was born in 1917. I don't remember the year she died. She lived 101 years later.
2018.
And so she lived through the Great Depression. She was born during the Spanish flu. She, you know, the wars she went through, she lost like five husbands, I want to say.
Wow.
So she had been through a lot, but still like her youthfulness and her just kind of exuberance for just finding humor in things. I don't know if it's genetic or if I just really admired that and kind of what I like emulated it from a young age. Like I just, so play to me is just kind of an essence. You just, it's a way to approach life with curiosity, with not allowing yourself to take yourself too seriously, you know? Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is by George Bernard Shaw, the playwright. And he said, "We don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing."
It's so true. Wow. And yeah. I feel like you definitely exude that. I mean, you're always joking around, and people commonly mistake you for your daughter's, your 25-year-old daughter's sister.
Yeah.
Instead of mom, because you do still exude
youthfulness. There is a part of me, there are some times I feel like, maybe I should grow up a little, but I.
No.
Why?
Stupid.
What's the point? I don't want to be like, I don't want to take, I have gone through periods of time where I took myself too seriously, and it's not fun.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It like affects my health. It's just like, I'm getting like sicker and yeah.
Yeah.
I have this photo of me, like when I was a 23-year-old pastor, and I'm wearing like khakis and my shirt's tucked into it.
He looks like a 45-year-old.
And I hung out, I think our whole staff on this, at this church I was at, like everybody was in their like 50s or something. And so I was like, I'm going to dress like I'm 50. I don't know. And then one day I kind of just snapped out. I was like, wait a minute. I don't like that.
Wait a minute. I'm 23.
I'm 23. And right. I'm like, why am I? It's funny.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with anybody who's watching or listening who loves khakis and a shirt, but that might be your style. That's your thing. It's fine. Right. It's great. But it wasn't me. It was me trying to force myself into another box. And
right.
Creativity, yeah. I think, taps us back into the essence of who we are.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah.
Okay. So you made it through the play
that's
word.
The thing.
And what about
the play words?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yes. So that's the play. And like, and if you like khakis and polos and stuff, that could be playful for you. You know what
it's
I mean?
True.
Like
that's
true.
Not,
yeah.
There's not one
that's a
way
really
to
point.
Play.
Yeah.
The create.
We were talking about that in the last episode. There's not a wrong way to do certain things. There's not a wrong way to be playful.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. Like Adam and I have a friend who literally just gets so much joy creating spreadsheets and going through numbers and trying to figure out how numbers work. And that's playing.
There is
that's
an art. There's an art to that. That is play. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a good point.
Yeah. So the create, you know, I feel like that's just, I have to create, whether it's making dolls, drawing, doing the surface pattern design, which, you know, I'm doing now, even like creating environments, like, you know, birthday parties were always such a huge thing in our family, and we love coming up with themes, and well, I love coming up with themes and driving people crazy because I have to have it in an exact way. So just creating anything creating is just such a deep part of who I am. I can't not create something. And healing has been a huge thing for me. Well, just even on just like a nutritional level, that kind of journey started like 15 years ago with some health things. And I realized that I just had like this epiphany that I discovered that our bodies are actually designed to heal themselves. I didn't know that. I grew up thinking, just waiting to get sick. Like we're just, you know, you're like, you're constantly bombarded with like, oh, the cold and flu season or, you know, you hear people getting like cancer and things like that. So I was in fear constantly of the next time I felt like my body was just waiting to kill me. But then when I learned that, no, actually our bodies are designed to heal if they're given the right environment. That started this whole other journey for me. And, that has been very healing and then has helped me to kind of extend my knowledge to like my friends and families and things like that. But I also really believe in like bio-individuality with healing. So what works for me is not necessarily what works for you, but you have the knowledge intrinsically to understand your body and what does work for you.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of us, we're that's cut off. We're not allowed to think like that. You know, we are told to just, you listen to like authorities.
Right.
Without actually asking, well, is this really actually working for me or not?
We're seeking the permission of somebody else who has a lab coat or whatever to tell us.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's one aspect of the heal part for me. The other aspect ties back into the play and the create, because playing and creating is very healing to me in my inner child. That refuses to grow up anyway. No. So why not heal them, you know?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And that's, and I've learned through the arts that I've done, the art pieces that I've done, sometimes what I create helps other people heal. Mm-hmm. And that's the wildest thing to me. That was not something I expected ever. But I have gotten messages, specifically with the dolls, when I would make the dolls, that this doll that I created that, you know, of course, I saw all the flaws in and thought, it's not that good. You know, I wish I could do it better, but whatever. People would send me messages saying how healing just having this doll in their presence is.
Wow.
I did not see that coming at all. But I think that's so, I love that. I want to be a part of that, you know?
Yeah, that's powerful.
It's really powerful. And it's also connected to this trust a little bit, it seems like, because you don't know that. It's not like you sit down with the intention. You can like have some intention when you're creating, say, a doll that like, okay, this is going to be meaningful to someone, but you don't know exactly how someone's going to receive your art. You don't know how it's going to be used. Speaking of, oh my God, I'm so excited. This is so fun.
Yes.
Because I have a doll. Oh my
gosh. This was made by Sarah Mock.
That's right. For those of you who are listening and not watching, I'm so sorry. You're going to have to go online and look at this, but this is the Ben doll.
Oh my gosh, the Ben Thomas doll.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe it?
Yeah, so it's how tall, like 12 inches tall doll that looks a lot like me. And it's Sarah actually created it for a music video that we were shooting. This is part of what I'm just introducing everyone to you and going, part of the amazing thing about Sarah is that she's like a yes person. She's just like, it's about creativity. It's like, yes, let's do it. And so when we started having these ideas of creating a music video, a stop motion music video for one of my songs, Sarah created this doll for us. We got about 2 days into filming and got about 8 seconds of our team like taking still frames, and we're like, oh my God, this is insane. So we never actually finished that particular video, but it was fun, and it was one of the most wonderful memories. And actually, I look at this doll often. It sits right up here. He's there, and partly as a reminder of a couple things. One reminder of the people and that I have people around me supporting like what I get to do to such a degree that they'll go and like spend a couple days with me building sets and creating little dolls. That's a reminder. So like he gets to be an embodiment of that. And just what it is to like to be playful and take risks and like, hell yeah, I have a doll of myself hanging out here. It's like the coolest thing. That's a little bit of the healing that I get from.
I love that.
Yeah, it's so great.
Sarah, what's the, can you think of a project that you felt the most, I guess, impacted or the most healing from the process of it? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's a really good question. The most healing through the process. You know, so recently, I was asked to make this coin.
Yes.
And not something I'd ever done or ever even thought of doing, but I was approached through my Etsy shop by some random person who saw a sticker that I created with a little like unicorn space cat on a moon and said, can you create a coin for this elementary school play park, a natural play park that this guy had donated to the school, a 15-acre natural play park? Can you imagine if we had 15 acres of
incredible.
A play park in our school growing up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
15 acres.
And incredible. A natural, like it's like all, you know, flowy lines, and the whole purpose is to be more in tune with nature as a child. It's such a beautiful thing. What's that?
Someone gets it.
Yes. So he approached me and I was like, you know, my first immediate reaction generally to something that I've never done before is like, nope, can't do it. I don't know how. But that's like, you know, half a second little like resistance. Okay. But so then I asked him more about it and found out it was legit. And, he, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Why not? You know, who knows? Yeah. I'd never thought I would design a coin, but he just wanted me to take the cat off and put two kids playing on the moon on the backside of the coin. And then the front side of the coin it ended up being a natural prairie from Illinois. Mm-hmm. This is in Illinois, this mm-hmm. elementary school. So if you're in Illinois and go down to, I think it's like Normal, like the, isn't that
Normal? Bloomington Illinois, Normal. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Who's Elementary School has the 15-acre natural play park to go look at it. But yeah, so I did it. And I think it was healing because that was one of those moments where I didn't, for whatever reason, give myself any like of that self-sabotage limitation thought process. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can do this. I'll figure it out. I just did it, you know, and I worked in Adobe Illustrator, which I think that was the healing part of it too, because for years I was like, I can't do digital art. I don't understand it. I can't figure that out. You know, that was always Adam's thing. He was the Photoshop person and he could do everything digital. When I had an idea that I wanted it to be digital, I would ask him to create it for me, you know? So like a couple years ago, I think it was at this point. Yeah. A couple years ago, I took this class online, which is what got me into surface pattern design. And through that class was, you know, she taught how to work in Illustrator.
Okay.
So the healing part was like the realization that I was just going through and creating this thing that I never thought I would create, never was on my radar in Illustrator, a program which to me seemed totally unlearnable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wasn't even thinking.
Yeah.
Daunting. That's totally a good word. I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just creating, going, yeah. So, oh my God, I keep hitting the microphone. I'm so sorry. And you know, so like even when I went back to take the cat off of the moon, which I had this illustration I had done in Illustrator through like a Skillshare class. And I went back and now knowing what I know, I couldn't even figure out how I made that in the first place. Like it's one of those things where you just follow the instructions and don't really learn it, you know?
Yeah.
But I was able to just turn it around, go, okay, well, this is what I do know. So let's undo everything and correct it and work it in a way that it still looks like that. And I know how to do it now. And then add all these, you know, the kids and then create a totally different design for the front. And it was fun and it was
so
very cool. Healing.
Cool. And so wait, is it an actual coin now? It's something that you're going to receive?
It is an actual coin and I'm waiting to receive it in the mail. And an actual coin, like a metal coin. When I was designing this in my head, I was picturing like those, you know, plastic like poker chips or something. But when he looped me in with the manufacturer and I, you know, to get the files over, I went to their site and I was like, oh no, this is like a coin, like an engraved like metal
legit
coin.
So neat.
That's so cool, sir. That's so great. And I love what it feels to me is this, like the exercising of creativity, the yesness of like, okay, I'm going to try this. It's going to stretch me. And then we get stretched a little bit. Again, it's like exercising muscles.
It builds your confidence too of like, oh, I can do this for the next thing. So I'm curious, so what's something that's stretching you right now? What's your next growth edge?
So entering the surface pattern design world has been a big stretch, mainly because while I've always created, I'm not always really great about showing what I create and wanting the world to see it. It is very vulnerable. Anytime you make anything art in it, cause art is just an expression. So, it's vulnerable putting it out there for criticism or critique or even praise. Like it's kind of scary. So with surface pattern design though, which I don't know if you don't know what surface pattern design, it's, anytime you see a shirt, like Joy, people who are watching this, your print on your dress, that's a surface pattern design. Okay. An artist created that. It's a seamless design repeat that can be found on fabrics like gift wrap, the, tapestries behind you, you know, that's a surface design.
Towels,
it's literally towels, tea towels, sheets, bed sheets, shower curtains, clothing, like it's literally everywhere. Surface pattern design is in every part, every aspect of our lives that we don't even realize. I never realized it.
And that people actually design these, like it's not just the manufacturer.
Artists,
yeah.
Well, even if it is, they have in-house artists designing.
Somebody's making it.
Yeah.
Somebody's making it. Yeah. And with the rise of AI, people are trying to do it with AI, but you can tell.
You can sniff it out.
Yeah. But like going back to like the history of like fabrics that were woven, you know, damask fabrics, the medallions and the design, that's all surface pattern design. So what's stretching me is A, believing that I can get into that industry. Mm-hmm. And B, what that means is I have to show my work. I can't design things and then just hide them away.
Yeah.
You know, I have to now search out companies that I feel like my art style would fit with and present my portfolio and say, hi, do you want to hire me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to license my art? Thanks.
It's a vulnerable, thing to do, putting yourself out there. Yes. And it strikes me too, like, gosh, how much artists have to do as far as you not only have to make the thing, then you have to try to market the thing in a way or sell it or show it to people. Hope that it's the person who's going to connect with it. And then if that's not the one, then go to the next person. How do you, if we have a listener out there who is like, gosh, this sounds overwhelming to me. How do I get started? How do I do the first step? What do I do not to feel overwhelmed? Because I imagine that's enough to make some people not want to do it at all.
Absolutely. I would say the biggest thing that got me feeling confident enough to even start is find a class. There are so many resources out there now of people doing what you want to be doing that are offering classes. Like Skillshare is a great place. They have classes on literally everything. It's a subscription site, but I think you can usually find, if you go on YouTube or whatever, do a quick like Skillshare like search or something. There's always somebody offering like 2 months free.
Okay.
So you can try it out. And then just finding people in the industry or in whatever area you want to learn more about that are willing to teach. Maybe they have a course that you can sign up for. Because that's an investment in ourselves. Like we don't think about that. We think, well, I don't have money for that. I can't. Or it's just frivolous, you know.
Yeah.
But it's an investment in who we are and expressing who we are on a very deep level. So,
so
find people that can teach you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Is there anything that you could tell for those of us listening or watching who maybe don't see themselves as creators or like I'm naturally creative? Any kind of encouragement of like, maybe there's a way that we could follow our curiosity without it being so traditional, or any guidance to what it means to live a life that you're following your curiosity?
Yeah. Whether you like it or not, you're creative. You're creating something. I would say that find what lights you up. Find an activity or something that just makes you, gives you that little spark of like, oh, I remember when I was a kid, I really loved doing that. Or maybe even not. Maybe like I discovered that when I was, you know, in my teen years that I forgot that I just find so much joy in doing whatever. And it doesn't have to be something like artistically creative, like, you know, visual artistically creative. It could be anything. Like I said in the beginning, like our friend who really loves doing spreadsheets. Great.
Yeah.
Follow that. Do that. Do more of those things that, I mean, it sounds so cliche. You hear it all the time. Like do more of what, you know, lights you up and what gives you joy, like what makes you happy. But that's genuinely what it is. You just have to allow yourself, give yourself the permission to play. Mm. Give yourself the permission to figure out what that means. Because it's not going to look like everybody else's, you know, I don't know. I think everybody is creative and it's not, we just get stuck on creative being art.
Yeah, so true.
It just isn't.
And the fact earlier that you were saying that it feels, you know, some people say it feels frivolous. And even at the very beginning of the interview, you were saying how when you're, you know, if you have a newborn that you don't have as much time, I think you said to care for yourself or take care of yourself or care about yourself. And just, I love that this idea even of art as self-care, as something that you're doing for yourself too. And then that naturally it comes out to the world. So I love that. And I love seeing that, like Ben said too, in your family and Seeing your kids become creatives just naturally, it's not something you had to teach them. This is how to be creative, son. Like, he just notices and watches you guys and kind of absorbs it through osmosis and is creative himself. So I love that so
much. Yeah, I think what was really important to me with our kids was allowing them to be who they are and not telling them who they are, you know, and giving them the space to figure that out. Because I think, you know, a lot of people don't, we're not given that space. It's a lot of us are told, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you can be a teacher, or, you know, but what if you don't want to be? What if you want to be a comic book artist? Yeah. Or what if you want to be a garbage man? What if you really are passionate about that?
Yeah.
That's still a form of play and creativity. You're still part of this creating a world, you know, where we have to remember we're all part of this. We're all connected in this whole crazy world, and we're all creating the story.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. This is so good. I feel like I hope this isn't too abstract of a question to ask, but how would you tell the difference between let's say somebody is making a spreadsheet or picking up garbage or drawing? How do you know when you're doing that in a way that is creative or when you're just like going through the motions? Do you think it's a feeling? Is it a, like, how would one check oneself on that or readjust? Yeah.
Well, I think that's right there. You got to check yourself. You know, it is about taking that however long you need to take to go, am I doing this for the enjoyment? Am I doing this because I feel on purpose when I do this? Mm-hmm. Or am I doing it because I'm going through the motions? And sometimes it's both. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like I'm creating because I'm going through the motions, but I have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
If that makes sense, you know, because then if I think about it, when I really go back to it, I do what I do creatively because I feel on purpose when I do that. And even when we are on purpose, it's not always like roses and you're not always feeling so like joyful.
That lit up
and
feeling. Yeah.
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 Yeah. But totally. I think it's just taking those moments to check in with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
And that's, you know what? Yeah. One day you might want to pick up garbage and then it's okay to then suddenly go, I don't want to do that anymore. Mm. And now I want to do something else. It's okay. You don't have to be the same person your entire life.
You have to be pigeonholed, one trick pony. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that a lot. That's a good reminder to me. And I think probably a lot of listeners.
Yeah. It's permission to follow that curiosity and you can't predict it. And if you're living in intention and you're, you know, I love that idea of living on purpose. And I think connecting, I know it can be an overused phrase of like, oh, live out your purpose, live out your purpose. I think we put a little bit like with a big capital P and it feels so intimidating, but yes, like it's more of this like day-to-day sort of flow or living in my purpose that is exuded there. And Sarah, I appreciate you and your whole family and your art and the things that you create, and you do things that like set a model for many of us. So we're just so grateful for you as a friend and as part of our extended community here. If anyone wants to go check out your art, we can send them to your Instagram. I mentioned any other places where we can send them.
I currently have my Instagram and a spoon flower shop, which is where my surface pattern lives.
Yes.
Spoonflower.com.
Spoonflower.com. Search up Sarah Mock and find her on Instagram. Sarah, lovely being with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Okay. We'll see you soon, friend.
Thank you so much, Sarah and Joy. What a wonderful conversation. So much fun. As we wrap up, I want to invite you into a few questions for conversation and contemplation. That might look like you taking 20 minutes or so with a journal on your own, or if you're with a group of others, perhaps at one of our table gatherings. It might look like you getting together with people and really fully being present to them and listening with your full heart to each other as you share honestly. Allow each of these questions to guide you into conversation, but feel free to throw out any ones that don't feel resonant to you. Sarah talked about these three words of play, create, and heal that kind of serve as guideposts for her life Which of these concepts most resonates with you? Which of them comes easiest to you? And which are tough for you? Play, create, and heal. How could you tap into even more playing, creating, and healing in life? Second, what is your growth edge? What are you doing right now that might be at the edge of your comfortability? What are you being beckoned into? Where is your curiosity leading you? And then what supports could you put in place to help you more fully lean into that growth edge during this season of life? You know, it's funny, just after our conversation with Sarah, I was listening to a podcast interview with author Elizabeth Gilbert, and she was talking about creativity and curiosity, and a lot of it really echoed a lot of what we were talking with Sarah about, what Sarah was sharing with us. And Liz says that a creative life is like constantly coming to a fork in the road where you routinely choose the path of curiosity over the path of fear. Not twice or three times or four times, but daily, systematically. It becomes your habit and your practice. So let me pose this last question for you. Where is that fork in the road showing up in life for you right now? Where are the daily opportunities for you to choose the path of curiosity over the path of fear? Take these questions, allow them to do some work in you this week. Now, as we continue our digital liturgy, I will hand it over to Scott Hodge.
Listen, friends, as many of you know, The Orchard is more than just a church. We are a spiritual community, a family. And we're all here because we believe in something greater. That's right, we believe in creating a space where everyone is welcomed, where faith is not just something you believe in, but where faith is lived and truly enjoyed, and yes, even shared with others. You know, listen, we are passionate about investing deeply in our local communities, truly fostering inclusivity, and turning our gatherings into something more akin to epic family dinners than traditional services. You know, we've done the megachurch thing, but we have found that smaller is indeed the new big, and that being together around tables truly nourishes the soul. But to continue the work, we need your support. And so I want to invite you to be an active part of this mission. That's right. I mean, what activates the mission are those who believe in the mission and those who support and contribute. And so, listen, your financial contribution will enable us to keep moving and keep growing. Everything from our second Sunday gatherings to our table gatherings, from our weekly digital liturgies to our Orchard Conversations podcast. Listen, there's a few ways you can give. You can give online by going to our website, theorchardcommunity.com/give. You can give through the Orchard app. You can search it in the App Store, Orchard Community Aurora. Or you can mail a check to our P.O. Box, 7688 Aurora, Illinois, 60507. And friends, know this, that no amount is too small. You know, as the scriptures encourage us to do, we're told to give as we've been blessed. And so if you've been blessed a little, give a little. If you've been blessed a lot, give more. And listen, friends, here's what I completely 100% believe, that A, we are living in unprecedented times, but B, I am convinced more than ever that our world, our cities, our communities, and our neighborhoods need the Orchard community now more than ever. And so I want to say thank you for believing in and supporting this beautiful community called The Orchard. Friends, your generosity truly is making such a difference. And now I want to leave you with this benediction, okay? Friends, listen, may you go forth with open hearts, knowing that you are both bearers and recipients of love and grace. May your days be filled with meaningful conversations and acts of kindness. And know this, you are not alone, and we are together in this journey. Amen. Friends, you are loved. We'll see you again soon.